Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 9th of March 2012. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Your readers today are Lisa Nightingale.
Hello.
Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Pam Tilbury.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Now, this week's announcements, and we start with What's On, with several events in and around Winchester. On Thursday the 15th and Friday the 30th of March, at 7:30pm at Winchester Discovery Centre, there's a talk by John Pilkington, Georgia to Afghanistan. This costs £10 and tickets are available from Oxfam Bookshops or the Winchester Discovery Centre. And at the Everyman Cinema next week, there is the Oscar-winning The Artist and the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Looking forward to May, there are several events leading up to and concerned with the Jubilee. That's the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. First of all, there's Mayfest, which brings concerts, sessions and ceilidhs to Winchester's streets, pubs and arts venues for 2 days of folk, jazz and roots and blues. They're on the 25th, Friday the 25th of May, from 10 a.m. to Saturday the 26th of May at 11 p.m. And it's all in and around Winchester's High Street. On Saturday the 26th of May at 10 p.m, that's the date and time I'm given anyway, at the Guildhall, Winchester, Claire Tomalin is discussing the life and works of Charles Dickens. She's just written an acclaimed Life of Dickens, which went straight into the bestseller lists. On the Sunday the 27th of May, there is the County Service of Thanksgiving for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. Marking 60 years of the Queen's reign, Winchester Cathedral will commemorate it with a special county service of thanksgiving at 11 a.m, which goes on till 1 p.m. On Thursday the 31st of May, at the Guildhall, Winchester, there's an event called The Churchill Letters, read by Celia Sands and Robert Hardy. Robert Hardy has portrayed Winston Churchill 7 times on screen and stage, and Celia Sands takes the part of her grandmother Clementine Churchill in these wonderful exposition of their correspondence. That starts at 6 p.m. and goes through to 9 p.m. And finally, there is a live recording of Just William with Martin Jarvis at the Winchester Theatre Royal on Sunday the 25th of May at 5:30 p.m. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 9th of March at 6:33 a.m. and begins at 6:01 p.m. On Wednesday the 14th of March, it ends at 6:22 a.m. and begins at 6:10 p.m. The main headlines this week are job cuts and service cuts at children's centres, RHCH in £10 million windfall to rebuild scanner, and Action Girl Katie doesn't let disability rule. So can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Lisa?
Yes, certainly. Jobs and services cut at children's centres. Children's centres in Winchester are set to cut jobs after losing control of vital services in a county council shake-up. 7 centres will lose management of their Sure Start services for children and families, which are subsidised by the council. A new provider, named only as National Charity, has won a tender to take over all Sure Start services, defeating a joint bid from the Winchester cluster. Sorry, carry on. Sorry about that. The affected children's centres are the Carroll Centre in Stanmore, Sparklers in Winnall, Rain and Shine in Kingsworthy, Little Petals in Bishop's Waltham, Merry-Go-Round in Wickham and Happy Valley in Denmead. Those centres will still host services but will work alongside new managers from the charity believed to be Action for Children. It has been unable to give comment. The revamp means that they will lose out on tens of thousands of pounds in revenue and subsidies. Jewel Heller Dixon, manager of the Carroll Centre, said she would have to halve both opening hours and her staff of 15. She added that SureStart employees should have their contracts picked up by the new provider, but they would be subject to different terms and conditions. She said, "We understand why the County Council had to do it, but they do not know the needs of the local community, and while they may be able to run a children's centre effectively, we have spent 3.5 years working here, and we are just making real inroads to the community now." A spokesman for the council would not confirm which bid had been successful. Ms. Helia Dixon added, "SureStart centres should be there to support the local community and offering services on the sort of scale, and I hope this will continue to happen." The centre's bid was backed by Winchester Area Community Action and the City Council, and Stanmore Ward member Councillor Jamie Scott said he was disappointed it failed. He said, "With the amount of time and hours people have put into this bid process, including volunteers working in their own time, to know it is likely to be in vain is a real shame. Why should it be given to a national organisation that has not really got local connections?" Hampshire Mums, Catherine Ovenden and Kate Reynolds, led the charge against the cuts, forming the Save Our Children's Centre campaign that took a petition to Downing Street last year. But mother of two, Catherine, said retaining some services was better than losing them all. She said, "It's not ideal for someone new coming in and taking over services, but it is preferable to losing them altogether." Joy Reynolds, head teacher of Lanterns Nursery School and Children's Centre in Week, confirmed it would retain control over its SureStart services because of its status as a school.
RHCH in £10 million windfall to rebuild scanner. Fundraisers at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital are this week celebrating a wonderful £10 million windfall to replace a scanner that was wrecked by a huge fire. The blaze ruined the MRI scanner at the RHCH last December. Only the bravery of firefighters prevented the flames from spreading to neighbouring buildings where operations were taking place. On Tuesday night, the government announced that the damaged equipment would be replaced after awarding the hospital trust a £10 million capital grant. Trish Spires, chairman of the League of Friends, which raises money for the hospital, said she was delighted. Mrs. Spires said, "We were getting despondent about the whole thing because we put so much work into it, and it was looking impressive and doing such a good job until the fire. All the help we can get is much appreciated, and this is just wonderful news." A Department of Health spokesman confirmed the project will replace equipment and repair the building and infrastructure. The equipment to be replaced includes an MRI scanner and a CT scanner. Nearly 100 firefighters tackled the blaze at the building that contained the scanners. The A&E department was shut for more than 24 hours and 50 people were moved to escape the flames. Jean Pushman, chairman of the Winchester and Basingstoke Patients Voice Forum, said, "I think it's wonderful for patients as it means they won't have to travel further for the scans." There was obviously upset among patients at the time, partly because the fire also put other parts of the hospital out of action. But staff did so well to recover so quickly, and this will be another boost to morale. Health Secretary Andrew Lansley said the cash injection worth £330 million across the country was new money that had been found through IT savings and extra contributions to capital spending from the government. Hampshire bosses had submitted bids for shares through the regional NHS authorities.
Action girl Kate doesn't let disability rule. 15 years ago, Kate Rowe took up exercise for the first time in her life. Now the wheelchair user is to take on yet another marathon. Miss Rowe, who suffers from spina bifida, will compete her third Reading Half Marathon next month to raise funds for the Jambulance Trust, a charity that has given her the freedom to travel. I never really did very much exercise, and I just tried things to see if they could work, said Miss Rowe, a newly qualified personal trainer, and she lives in Otterbourne Road, Compton. I'm a lot fitter than I was, a lot healthier than I was. I certainly would encourage other people to do the same. Miss Rowe, who also has taken part in the Gosport Half Marathon, will compete in the 13.1-mile course on April the 1st. Miss Rowe was born with the congenital defect of the spine, which means she is wheelchair-bound and relies on the full-time care of her parents, Ruby and Richard. The 46-year-old took up exercise after a physiotherapist suggested she go to the gym to help strengthen a problem shoulder, and she has never looked back. She now hopes to run exercise classes for other wheelchair users. The Jambulance Trust organises trips for people with illness or disability, allowing them to go on holidays in the UK and abroad, thanks to the help from volunteer carers using special jambulances. These are a cross between a coach and an ambulance, and are equipped with medical and disabled facilities, including stretchers, a resuscitation unit, and a disabled toilet. Miss Rowe has been on trips to Italy, Germany, North Scotland and Wales with the charity. It means you can go to places and go on holidays that you couldn't because of carers and doctors, said Miss Rowe. It also means that your own carers can have a holiday themselves, knowing that you are cared for. She trains at the River Park Leisure Centre gym, and in the summer months can be found training at the Winchester University Athletic Track at Bar End. And there's a lovely, colourful picture of Kate on her disabled bicycle at the start of a former marathon expedition.
That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Barber, Thelma Barber, peacefully at Dower House, Headbourne Worthy, age 90. Batterbury, Connie Batterbury, peacefully in hospital, age 90. Byatt, John Byatt, age 97. Frew, John Muir Frew, peacefully at home, age 90. Gentry, Christopher Roy Gentry, peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital. Hood, Joan Beatrice Hood, peacefully age 92. Ingram, Sally Diana Ingram. Kelly, Suniva Kelly, suddenly at St. Lucy's Convent, Medstead. Kent, Bruce Kent, aged 92. Nunn, Dorothy Nunn, aged 84, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Penton, Brian Hughes Penton, aged 75. Pollock, Kathy Pollock, aged 71. Rogers, Jane Helen Rogers, aged 46. Smith, Isla Jane Smith, aged 73, in Basingstoke Hospital. Smith, Ken Smith, suddenly aged 75. And Waters, Sonia Mary Waters, aged 80. Christian comment this week is read by Lisa. Thank you, Lisa.
This week it's called Prayer Needs to Be Worked At by Rosemary A. Baker. Sometimes I have a real struggle to find something to write for this piece, and I have thought about giving up. So I was delighted recently to discover at a party that I have at least one reader who wants me to continue. He even suggested a topic. My problem this week is I have too many ideas, so I will save his suggestion for a future occasion, as it is not time specific. March the 1st was World Book Day, and the 8th is International Women's Day. It's Fair Trade Fortnight, and next week is National Declutter Week, a cause dear to my heart, or should be. It is also the National Week of Prayer for the Healing of AIDS, and the following week is the Week of Prayer for Dementia Sufferers and its awareness. It is also the Christian season of Lent, and many churches and groups of churches are having meetings and special series of study. In King Somborne and District, we too have arranged a series of meetings on some difficult questions. The talk I am to give is Why Pray? The idea of special days and weeks for prayer fits this theme and leads us to yet more questions. Are they of any use? Are they just for Christians? Let's start by looking at prayer itself. Prayer, from the Latin precatio, is an invocation or act that seeks to activate a rapport up to a deity or object of worship through deliberate communication. It can be a form of religious practice, may be individual or communal, and take place in a public or in private. It may involve the use of words or song. When language is used, prayer may take the form of a hymn, incantation, formal creed, or a spontaneous utterance in a praying person. There are different forms, such as petitionary prayer, prayers of supplication, thanksgiving, and worship or praise. Prayer may be directed towards a deity, spirit, deceased person, or lofty idea for the person of worshipping, requesting guidance or assistance, confessing sins, or to express one's thoughts and emotions. Thus, people pray for many reasons, such as personal benefit or for the sake of others. Most major religions involve prayer in one way or another. Scientific studies regarding the use of prayer have mostly concentrated on its effect on the healing of sick or injured people. The efficacy of petition in prayer for physical healing to a deity has been evaluated in numerous studies, with contradictory results. However, there have been criticism of many of the studies. So prayer is about communication and relationships, and like other forms of these, needs to be worked at. Special days and weeks can serve as helpful ways to focus our prayers.
Moving on to letters to the editor, the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and it's from Tony Mundy. Was this result an April the 1st wind-up? Sir, was your front page article, High Street Market Gets Thumbs Up on March the 1st, an early April Fool's Day wind-up? The subject of the inappropriate positioning of this market has been a discussion point between local residents for some time. However, the results of the survey carried out, probably at great expense by TSE, is just too much to swallow. I've been a resident since 1964 and, like many local friends, cannot comprehend the logic behind this research or its findings. The very obvious objective, of course, is to boost the City Council's coffers with easy money from the stallholders' rentals. Anyone who's graduated with a degree from the University of Life will readily confirm that statistics are generally manipulated and are certainly open to abuse. No one will ever convince me that 94% of local residents interviewed were in favour of the street market in its present location. The outcome of any such surveys really does depend on 1. The questions that are asked and how they're phrased, usually loaded. 2. The number of people who are actually interviewed on a specific day or time. And 3. The targeted age groups. I readily admit to being a born sceptic, and when I'm confronted with research findings similar to these, my scepticism will never change. Chris Turner, Executive Director of BID, naively considers that the increased footfall in the High Street is solely due to the street market. He also made a similar statement after the festive season. Is he under the illusion that we local yokels all came up from Itchen on our bikes? Is our council leader, Councillor Beckett, prepared to divulge just how many several complaints were? If we are to wait for Silver Hill Renaissance to be completed before a long-term site for the market is found, my advice is not to hold your breath. To date, we've been waiting 10 years plus and the clock is still ticking. In conclusion, I was really surprised that our local MP appears to endorse the findings. And that's from Tony Mundy of Wood Green Road, Hairstock.
P.E. Smith's letter is headed, Britain Would Win the Gold Medal for Littering. Sir, I have lived in Hampshire for over 35 years, and in all that time I have never seen so much litter on the motorways and main roads. With the Olympics getting closer, whatever will our overseas visitors think as they travel around the country to the various events? Low-risk prisoners, those given community service, and those that are taking money from the taxpayers should help get the county cleaned up. After all, we are being told that there is no money available from central government, so these people should not be taking anyone else's jobs. And that's from P.E. Smith, Winslade Road, Winchester.
The next letter is from a Steve Moat from Victim Support, and his letter is headed Threat to Victim Support Services. Sir, I am a senior manager for Victim Support in Hampshire and Isle of Wight, and I am writing about the threat to services for victims and witnesses when police and crime commissioners, called PCCs, are elected this November. Victim Support is a charity that works to help people find the strength to deal with crime. Through our witness service, we also help people who attend court to give evidence. Our free services are delivered by more than 6,000 volunteers, over 200 in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight alone. Last year, we helped some 1 million victims of crime and over 200,000 witnesses in court. PCCs will herald a significant change to the funding landscape and threaten what already exists and works well. Current Ministry of Justice funding for victims and witnesses services will be devolved to the PCCs, who will then commission those services locally. We believe this is wrong and is not in the best interests of victims and witnesses. People who need help will be unable to uniformly access the support that is currently available. Services will become fragmented and inconsistent, dependent on what individual PCCs view as a priority for funding. The proposal to devolve this area of funding to PCCs is one of several detailed in a consultation document published by the Ministry of Justice on January the 30th. We welcome this focus on victims and witnesses and endorse a number of positive suggestions for reform and improvement. Victim Support recognises the need to change, and on the back of cuts last year, we closed offices and reduced staffing, just so many other organisations have done. The proposal to devolve funding for victims and witness services is, however, one change too many. If your readers share our concerns, then I would urge them to make representation to their MP and also make their views known by taking part in the Ministry of Justice consultation online. The consultation ends on April the 22nd.
John Seeger Green writes, "When less service means more profit." Sir, one might debate whether the staff at the bus station are surly and unfriendly because of selection training or are naturally thus endowed. What cannot be argued is that comfortably ensconced in their recently expanded heated office, they take no steps to see that buses depart at the scheduled time. It may be part of company policy, as the computerised departure indicator board has scarcely operated since the new timetable was introduced. The notices are not adequately specific, and to know scheduled times, one must have in one's possession a printed timetable for the route concerned. So Joe Public ends up with a raw deal, and subsidised stagecoach makes ever greater profits, offering less service. What a surprise. That's from John Seeger Green, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
Norma Goodwin, and there's another letter about stagecoach. Stagecoach lacks the velvet touch, sir. Stagecoach took away our bus service, and now they have the cheek to use Oliver's battery as a training ground for new drivers. Since they withdrew this vital service, we have had velvet with bright, clean buses which keep to the timetable. Their drivers are friendly. They actually speak to you and go the extra mile to be helpful. One young driver, overhearing me say I had forgotten to post a letter in town, asked me if I would like to post it in the box near the bus stop where he stopped for a passenger to alight. Contrast that with Stagecoach. Last Thursday, I ran for a number 5 in City Road, as I had with me an elderly friend who was anxious to get home. I was not far from the stop and put out my hand to let the driver know that we wanted his bus. He saw me, but just sailed on when he could easily have just pulled into the stop. My friend remarked not to worry, as it was only a 10-minute service. 10 minutes, my foot. It was 25. And that comes from Norma Goodwin, Mumford Road, Oliver's Battery.
The next letter is titled Hideous Glare of Gulag Winchester. Sir, are the good people of Winchester aware that the whole of their gracious city is about to be turned into a close version of a stockyard or huge container depot? I refer to the hideous glare of white industrial estate lighting that is about to replace the soft, warming glow of the present yellow lamps, which, if not quite as romantic as gas lights, at least create a pleasant, homely atmosphere in the quiet street or close. Do not invade your windows and add a human touch to the environment. How many of your readers were asked if their own pretty neighbourhood wanted their lamps uprooted, replaced by taller posts, and their lawns and front rooms flooded with harsher white floodlights? Sensible on main traffic routes, perhaps, but our elected bureaucrats seem to have little empathy with the effect of environmental ambience on many people's lives in this case. Oh yes, they have energy saving, although the difference in wattage per lamp is not made clear, or the cost of replacing posts and bulbs, which will take years to recover anyway. Is there any opportunity for residents of quiet streets and areas to be allowed to keep their softer lighting? Or will their representatives pass the buck to plead it's not their concern until it's too late and a touch of Narnia has become Gulag Winchester? This is from Peter Marsh, Ashley Close, Hairstock.
Now we have an opportunity to see how much better things were 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that was in 1812. The success which has attended the exertions of the Committee of the Hampshire Society for the Education of the Poor is subject to congratulation to every friend to our Constitution, as established in the Church and State. The central school at Winchester already forms an excellent specimen of the new system of education, and the committee are entitled to the highest credit for having proceeded with the judgment and activity in arrangement of their local schools. And the next one is on Friday. A most elegant ball and supper were given by Mr. and Mrs. Noons at Old Alsford House in commemoration of their having completed the 25th year of their marriage. Upwards of 130 of neighbouring gentry were present. On the Sunday following, a most excellent dinner of roast beef, 6 sheep and plum pudding and ale was given to all the poor of the parish of Old Alsford, upwards of 300 in number, in a barn fitted up for the occasion.
And 100 years ago, that's 1912, to assist in wiping out the heavy deficiency in their funds, the Winchester City Football Club organised a great social gathering, which took place at the Guildhall on Monday evening. The company numbered no fewer than 560, and the event was honoured by the presence of Major, the Honourable Guy Baring MP, and the Mayor, Councillor F.W. Holdaway. And secondly, during the past few weeks, the premises of Messrs. Teague and King Limited, pianoforte dealers and music warehousemen of 46 High Street, Winchester, have undergone extensive alteration, including an entirely new front, which will be generally regarded as an ornamentation to the High Street. In the place of the old square window front has been erected a corridor window, which provides show space for a dozen pianofortes and other instruments, which can be seen to the fullest advantage.
50 years ago was 1962. The Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester is facing a serious shortage of maternity staff, and there is a fear that unless more midwives are recruited, the service may have to reduce the number of beds available for expectant mothers. A statement issued this week says that, like maternity departments throughout the country, the Royal Hampshire County Hospital is feeling the effect of the increasing number of mothers who wish to have their babies in hospital. And the next item, the 400 units of accommodation in Pylands Wood Estate in Burselden have been selected by Winchester Rural District Council for a pilot scheme for a paper bag method of refuse collection. To explain the scheme, a meeting was held at Old Netley Parish Hall on Monday, but only 15 residents took the trouble to attend. Mr. W.G. Moore, chairman of Winchester RDC, Public Health Committee, presided, and a film called Dustbins Get the Sack was shown.
And now, 25 years ago in 1987, Winchester MP John Brown has come out against cathedrals imposing entrance fees to meet rising costs. He's criticised plans to raise money for repairs by charging at the door. Instead, the government should match public donations, he said. I'm against the principle of charging for access to a place of worship. It could be seen as pay-to-pray policy. Cathedrals must be considered a national asset, said Mr. Brown. Secondly, after operating for over 60 years, the Harris Eastley Bacon Factory in Byron Road will close on April the 3rd with the loss of 75 jobs. Blame has been laid on Eastleigh Borough Council's insistence that factory improvements, which would have cost £1 million, should be carried out. But a council spokesman said all parties are agreed that the old established factory needs substantial improvement. The closure is bitterly opposed by the employees' trade union, USDAW.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Pam and will be followed by First Person read by Brian. Thank you, Pam.
The headline of Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is Kate is an inspiration. 15 years ago, Kate Rowe took up exercise for the first time in her life. Now the wheelchair-bound user is to take on yet another half marathon. Miss Rowe, who suffers from spina bifida, will compete in her third Reading Half Marathon next month to raise funds for the Jumbulance Trust, a charity that has given her the freedom to travel. It's an inspiring story of a courageous woman who refused to let her disability get her down. Miss Rowe from Compton was born with the congenital defect of the spine, which means she is wheelchair-bound and relies on the full-time care of her parents, Ruby and Richard. The 46-year-old took up exercise after a physiotherapist suggested she go to the gym to help strengthen a problem shoulder, and she has never looked back. It just goes to show how everyone can benefit from getting active, which can not only make you fitter and improve your health, but boost confidence and self-esteem. We can all learn a lesson from Kate's actions. We wish her all the best as she embarks on another fundraising marathon for a worthy charity.
And First Person this week is Ron Allison, writing about markets, mayors and Pompey. I write this week as a member of a minority group. This is not an entirely unknown position in which to find myself, but it came as a bit of a shock to realise my current status only when I read the front page lead in last week's Hampshire Chronicle. Apparently on the basis of a survey of 200 people, some of them residents of Winchester, others just visiting, an overwhelming majority was in favour of the market in the city's high street. I was not one of those polled. I've never been asked my opinion on any burning topic of any day, but for the record, I liked my high street as it had become before the stalls arrived, with a clear view of the splendid new pavements adding to the attraction of the architecture. Now, this is not an issue which would lead me to advocate the setting up of barricades, far less to man them if they did appear. It does, however, seem a pity that the splendid walk down from Westgate is no longer the joy it was, with the market waiting just round the corner from Marks and Sparks in Middle Brook Street. I do accept, though, that in these difficult times it may well be a good thing commercially for Winchester. So, I suppose, let it be. Elsewhere in Hampshire, the realities of life in 2012 have hit home in Portsmouth, where the news from Fratton Park has seemed to get worse by the day. As a Southampton supporter, I take no pleasure at all in seeing our neighbours and rivals in financial distress, anything but, in fact. I can only remind them of where the Saints were not that long ago and hope that they too find a financial saviour. Football needs Pompey. Finally, some political observations. I'm fascinated by American presidential elections. I always have been since Harry Truman beat Thomas Dewey in 1948. They do go on a bit, though, and with voting still months away, I'm beginning to suffer from overkill already. Only when the Republicans have sorted out who is their candidate will we get down to the real business. 4 years ago, there was excitement over who would be the Democrats' candidate. Would it be a woman or a black man? Either way, it would have been a first. When this year the Republicans have made their choice, the fascination will be to see if President Obama wins a second term. It's also different from our own systems, both national and local. Yet things do sometimes change here, and now we're in the business of directing elected the mayor of some cities. How will that play here? Will it catch on? And will we all be eventually be following the chalkboard blackboards to vote for, say, the mayor of Romsey or Andover? It could be fun.
Now, two items from Belgarum's alternative look at the week. The first is headed right up their alley. In these straitened times, any publicity boost for local shops is welcome news. The Winchester Bookshop, down a near Dickensian alley off St George's Street, has been selling second-hand books since 1991. In recent years, it has battled with the rise of Amazon and the success of the Deanery book sale in the Cathedral Close. A recent Daily Telegraph guide to Winchester described the three-story building with thousands of books as a dusty heaven. It was opened by Michael Green, John Barton, Robert Brown and Douglas Barnes. John retired in 2003 and Michael died in 2006. But Robert and Douglas have been joined by John and Michael's daughters, Anne Louise and Sandra. Other local establishments getting name checks were Leydstone House Hotel, the Black Rat Restaurant, the Wickham Arms and assorted shops in the square, including Marsh Antique Clocks. The second item is no news is good news. At first glance, it probably looked like a front page news. Fire trucks were spotted outside the Hampshire Police Headquarters in Romsey Road, Winchester. Yet it was not a major emergency, nor even a minor one, but an exercise. It involved battling a small fire on the premises, which led some eyewitnesses to think the drama was real. However, the police confirmed that the incident on the evening of Monday, February the 27th, was simply for training. No need to hold the front page then. But it raised an eyebrow with Belgarum. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Lisa. Thank you, Lisa.
Has the time come for mobility scooter riders to take a test? An elderly Hampshire woman was badly injured after being hit by a mobility scooter. She says, "It was like being hit by a bus." That was the description Eileen Butt, who was 90 years of age, gave after she was mowed down by a mobility scooter. The pensioner was walking along a Hampshire pavement with two friends when a scooter rider came out of the blue and hit them all from behind. Mrs. Butt was pushed to the ground, fell on her face and suffered severe head and facial injuries. But even though she required hospital treatment, the mobility scooter rider who had knocked her over drove off before an ambulance arrived and did not leave her details. Mrs. Butt said it was left to the landlord and pubgoers at a nearby pub to help her and her friends who had been hurt in the incident. Mrs. Butt explained, "We were walking along the pavement, three in a line, and it just came out of the blue. It was as if a bus had driven straight into my back. I'll never forget the sensation. We landed on the ground and she came over to us and said, 'Sorry, didn't you hear my hooter?' I was completely knocked out for a couple of seconds. Thank goodness it happened outside the pub. They picked us up and took us inside and got us cups of tea. The driver came in the pub afterwards and she said, "Who's paying for those teas?" and walked out again. She never even said sorry. "We couldn't believe it," said the pensioner, who suffered black eyes and a bruise the size of an orange on her head. Mrs. Butt says police are investigating, but she is now worried about going out in case something similar happens again. The incident has raised the question of the safety of mobility scooters and whether or not users should undertake compulsory training or even a formal test if they do not possess a driving licence. David Livermore, chairman of mobility scooter rambling group Hampshire O-Mobility, believes that there could be a case for some assessment if people have never driven before. He said, "I think some people certainly need an assessment and a little bit more guidance on how to control the scooter and a bit of off-road sense, because if you haven't driven before, you haven't got that road sense. I don't know if that should be a compulsory test or just a bit more guidance and supervision." But he added that pedestrians need training too, not the mobility scooter users. Mr. Livermore said, "People place themselves in danger. I'm always careful to manoeuvre into a space slowly and do it as safely as possible, but people just try to get round me and dive in front. You've got to remember that mobility scooters are a replacement for people being able to walk. If you stop people from using them, you are essentially saying to people you can't go out. If I was going to make any changes at all, I would look at the manufacturers and the quality controls of these vehicles. There are improvements that could be made to that." Mobility scooters in law are limited to 4 miles per hour on the pavement and must have a speed restrictor fitted to them. But Mr. Livermore says it is a rule that is occasionally broken by some users. He said, "People going above 4 miles per hour on the pavement is a potential problem, but it is up to the scooter users to be responsible. The law is clear, but you always get people who will abuse any rules, just like they get cyclists who cycle on the pavement." And there's a lovely picture of people on their mobility scooters enjoying a New Forest Row Mobility Rambling event.
Battle over Downland's future to be rekindled. Winchester civic campaigners are opposing moves that could endanger Chalk Downland on the edge of the city. The City of Winchester Trust is worried that planners are earmarking Bushfield Down as an opportunity site for development. The Down, just south of Badger Farm and Whiteshoot Ridge, is currently grassland and includes the former Bushfield Camp Army base, redundant since 1970s. Recent plans that Bushfield could be the site for a knowledge park of high-tech businesses fell through after consultants said it was not economically viable. Patrick Davies, chairman of the Trust's policy group, said he was puzzled why the council was seeking to resurrect development ideas for the Down. There was no public consultation to test the idea during the recent blueprint exercises, he said. The deadline for representations from the public to the City Council about its new plan is next Monday, March the 12th. Mr. Davies said the Trust opposes development. The Trust's view is that anything developed there would be highly visible from St. Catherine's Hill. That area is now sitting next to the South Downs National Park. It is not brownfield anymore, as its use as an army base was abandoned years ago. There can be no justification for replacing the rusting skeletons of the two sheds with a rash of new buildings on the site. Campaigners want to protect the Downland for the use of future generations. The Bushfield Down Supporters Group, set up a decade ago, has applied to have it legally classed as a village green, giving it more protection. After several years of legal wrangling, the issue will finally come before a public inquiry on Monday, March the 19th. Campaigners will have to overcome two hurdles to secure the village green status. The first is to prove that their bid, which involved reams of paperwork, was properly made. Lawyers for the church commissioners, which owns the land, are expected to argue that it was flawed. That issue alone is likely to take up the first day of the inquiry at the Hampshire County Council's HQ in Winchester. If the campaigners win that battle, the issue will be adjourned and another hearing will be held later this year. BDSG founder John Leonard said Bushfield Camp has been linked with industry and housing, but we believe that it should be protected because of its environmental benefit and importance. To secure village green status, campaigners must prove there has been public access to Bushfield Camp for at least 20 years. While sections were fenced off in 2003, they will argue there was total access for more than two decades before then. If the City Council's draft strategy is approved later this year, it could leave the door open to the site being developed in the long term.
MP for Winchester and Chandos Ford, Steve Brine, writes the Westminster Diary. Eagle-eyed Chronicle readers will have spotted my new role as a member of the influential Justice Select Committee. Our job is to look very closely at Ken Clark, never dull, and examine the Ministry of Justice, Attorney General's Office and Crown Prosecution Service, among others. We have just begun an inquiry into the way freedom of information legislation is working, which promises to be a huge public interest. Last week, we had the media in to give evidence, and very soon we will hear from the former Cabinet Office Secretary, Gus O'Donnell. The invitation has also been extended to Tony Blair, but we are not holding our breath. Any constituents with views on the FOI Act are welcome to get in touch, and views can even form part of the official evidence tabled as part of this piece of work. Following a moving visit to my surgery recently, I am now working with the campaigning website Mumsnet on a new campaign to improve the care given to couples who experience miscarriage. I am sure many readers of this column will have some experience of miscarriage or know people who have, because it is much more common than we might think. The campaign has produced a 5-point plan, which we would like to see rolled out in the NHS trusts across the country. I am working in Parliament to see what we can do nationally to make this happen. And locally, I am working well with our new hospital trust to see we sharpen up in Winchester. Initially, signs are encouraging. Recently, I welcomed Schools Minister Nick Gibb to Winchester, and we didn't stand still, visiting the university to discuss teaching training before visiting Thornton School in Chandos Ford and Henry Beaufort in Hairstock. It was good to showcase some of the best in class and to give the minister the chance to put some challenging questions to those who train some 30% of new qualified teachers. And I am pleased to report there was some lively discussion. Finally, I had a feeling my campaign to bring a new primary school to Winchester would strike a chord. But even I have been surprised how quickly we have been able to focus minds at the County Council. The proposal for a new 4 to 16 year entry adjacent to Westgate is not necessarily the answer, and I have made it clear to HCC they should not stop site searching, but the consultation they have launched is welcome, and I urge constituents and all city schools to engage positively with it. As I have said, from the start, temporary classrooms must be just that. We need a new primary school in Winchester, and we need it fast.
Next item is Culture on Menu as Cafe Shows Artistic Side. A Winchester cafe is set to be transformed into an art gallery to bring more culture to the city. The Coffee House in Jury Street is being transformed this month into the Jury Street Art Cafe. Owner James Dickens, has gone into partnership with hypnotherapist John Hayes and Chris Polach, who runs a foreign language school. Mr. Hayes will be managing the new cafe and acting as curator of the Jury Street Art Gallery, which will operate out of the basement, open to local and national artists. He said, "We want to create a space that's a lot more independent, a space where groups can book a room and have their own control and dictate how they run themselves, like film clubs and book clubs. Mr. Dickens, who runs Next Door Computer Solutions, originally opened the cafe 3 years ago, but said the business began to boom when Mr. Hayes put on shows in the basement. He said the business had been ticking over for a while, but John started doing a show downstairs, and that was really successful, and a lot of people turned up to see it. It really made me see how the cafe should be used, and people started coming and making it their own space. With the new setup, I think we all have a similar vision as to where we want to go, and it's looking good. Alongside the gallery, the cafe will still operate, selling drinks and snacks.
Lib Dem doctor resigns, anger over health bill. He was one of the most senior experts in the health service. He was also a card-carrying Liberal Democrat, but not anymore, as Dr. Graham Wynyard has quit the party. The former chair of Winchester Liberal Democrats has taken the dramatic step in protest at the government's health bill. In the 1990s, Dr. Wynyard was Deputy Chief Medical Officer and also NHS Medical Director. After that, he advised the Lib Dems on health policy. He has now branded the controversial new health bill as a slow-motion disaster for the NHS and his party. Last month, February, he helped to launch an online petition by Winchester Lib Dems against changes which attracted hundreds of backers. However, his party leader Nick Clegg has since given his backing to the bill. As a result, Dr. Wynyard, who's pictured here, has written to the Deputy Prime Minister to officially tender his resignation from the party. A copy of the letter seen by Hampshire Chronicle argues that patients, staff and other health experts are almost all against the bill. He said the local party in Winchester has been very much involved in the campaign to drop the bill, and if the party nationally does that, I imagine I would rejoin like a shot.
Elderly let down in power cuts. Concerns have been raised over the lack of response by Winchester City Council during recent power cuts. Councillor Eileen Berry, Conservative, said the problem arose when Kingsworthy, Twyford and other areas were without power for 2 to 3 hours or longer, which corresponded with the recent cold weather. She raised the issue at a meeting of the full council and said many people had tried to contact the City Council concerned for elderly or vulnerable people, but they were disappointed by the response. Around 1,300 homes were without power in Kingsworthy over the weekend of February the 4th, just 2 weeks after a similar number were affected. Although most homes had power restored within a few hours on the Saturday evening, 200 remained without electricity until the next afternoon. A separate power cut also occurred on Sunday, February the 5th, and this affected 2,000 homes. Southern Electric has apologised to customers and said the faults were due to the adverse weather. Bosses have since agreed to pump £2 million into improving the network's infrastructure in Kingsworthy. Councillor Berry said although a government directive requires councils to put in place contingency plans to ensure the safety of such people in extreme weather, this is only meant to be for temperatures below minus 10. However, she said the additional power problems surely meant the plan should have been put into action. Councillor Tony Coates, lead member for Strategic Housing and Landlord Services, said the council's response depended on the circumstances, but for power cuts, in the first instance, customers were referred to the energy supplier. He said the council worked with Hampshire County Council to provide an emergency plan. He added that the county council has temporary heating supplies and agreed procedure with Southern Electric or Scottish and Southern Energy Group about being notified of serious problems, but had not been notified of any incidences recently and would investigate why this had not happened. He said an older person's support officer had visited sheltered housing tenants who had been affected by the power loss in Twyford. Council officers will meet with County Council emergency planning team to review events to consider whether further action is needed in the future.
Giving GPs more power is good for county. Hospital boss backs controversial health bill. The new boss at the Royal Hampshire County Council has backed the controversial health and social care bill being debated in Parliament. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, said the bill would improve services at both Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals, which merged in January of this year. The bill will see GPs able to commission their own services rather than go through the current primary care trust system, which will be abolished. Most healthcare professionals are against the bill. Mrs. Edwards praised the GPs in the Winchester and Basingstoke area and said hospital staff would find it easier to deal with doctors than administrators. Speaking at a meeting of the Winchester City Residents Association, she said, "I would rather be talking to GPs than managers when it comes to commissioning. When you get hospital doctors in rooms with GPs, you get a different reaction to when you get them in the room with managers." But she added, "We are very lucky in this locality in that we have some superb GPs, but I would not necessarily say the same thing if I was, for example, in London. For Hampshire, I think the bill is great, but I possibly would not be saying that if I were somewhere else." Mrs. Edwards said the merger was necessary to keep both hospitals providing services at their current levels and meet target patient requirements. Hospitals providing treatments for acute conditions such as heart disease, strokes and major trauma accidents have to cover an area of 500,000 people, with the combined trust serving an area of 600,000 people. It also means the trust continues as a foundation trust, which allows it to keep and reinvest surpluses. Mrs. Edwards said she was happy to offer private treatments because the money could be put back into improving services. She said, "If people are going to spend money on private healthcare, I can deliver it at a quality that they want to receive. I think most people who want the profits to go back into the NHS. However, the amount of money the trust can make from private patients is capped at 2.3% of its income. Meanwhile, she said the new trust board had confirmed it would spend £3 million on moving the outpatient services from outside the main hospital unit to the Burrell Wing, which is currently being refurbished. Mrs. Edwards also confirmed no clinical positions had been cut during the trust merger and that only administrative positions had been reduced.
Passenger died after driver was distracted by a dog. A Chilbolton woman died after the van in which she was a passenger crashed when the driver was distracted by a dog, an inquest heard. Susan Austin was travelling with her husband William last July along the A272 towards Winchester in their silver Ford Transit when it clipped a tree and flipped on its side. The van slid off the near side verge and collided with another tree, killing Mrs. Austin, 58, instantly. Her husband and their dog were trapped in the vehicle for more than an hour before they were rescued by the fire service. Mr. Austin, 59, of Station Road, Chilbolton, said the couple had been taking their Labrador-type dog, Darcy, to the vets when it became agitated and distracted him. He said the dog was down next to Sue in the footwell. Sue was consoling Darcy, but then she started to whine a bit and came towards me and I said, "Stay, Darcy." Just as I said this, I felt us hit soft ground and that it was that quick. Fiona Foster witnessed the accident on July 28th while driving the opposite direction towards Andover. She said, "I saw the van bunny hop into the road and then it went on its side and slid across the carriageway into trees. It was very badly damaged." Miss Foster called the emergency services and was soon joined by other motorists who discovered Mr. Austin alive and kept him conscious before the ambulances arrived. Mrs. Austin was pronounced dead at the scene, while Mr. Austin was taken to Southampton General Hospital. Deputy Coroner for Central Hampshire, Simon Burge, recorded a verdict of accidental death. He added, "This is not a case in which any blame can or should be apportioned. Distraction can and does happen to all of us when driving."
church reaches out to help the poor. Members of a Winchester church have presented a cheque to a local charity that helps the poor. Winchester Family Church staged several events around Christmas and raised £3,000 for the Winchester Basics Bank. The charity, based in Midland Road, Highcliffe, supports the increasing number of those in desperate need with emergency food and clothing. Pam Carr and Lorena Brown from the church presented the cheque to Jane Lunn Rockcliffe, chairman of the trustees. Miss Carr said, "The bank is a local charity and we wanted to support something local. We do get people coming in to us for help and we pass them on to Basics. We can follow them through with more support." The Basics is a church organisation supported by many of the churches around Winchester. The bank recently predicted it would help at least 2,000 clients by the end of 2011, double the number compared to when it launched in 2004. The family church held a Christmas crafts market and a carol service, and also Charters estate agents donated £200. And there's a colour photograph of a huge cheque for £3,000 being presented in the Basics shop? I don't know. Okay, thank you.
The National Service Style Project for the Young. Hundreds of young people in Hampshire will take part in a National Service Style course this summer. The National Citizen Service Scheme offers 16-year-olds the chance to spend a week on outdoor activity courses before they are required to volunteer on community projects to help their area. The projects could include renovating rundown buildings, working with children from disadvantaged backgrounds, or tending gardens for older people. It was piloted last year, and now the government has announced that the scheme will be expanded across the county, with 660 across the Hampshire County Council area taking place this summer. Charities and consortia have been handed millions of pounds to ensure a cross-section of youngsters, including those on free school meals and private school students, take part. Each placement cost taxpayers about £1,400. Mick Hurd, the Minister for Civil Society, said children would make friends, learn skills and help their communities, but critics have pointed out that its expansion follows deep cuts to youth services in local authorities across the country.
MP on panel in special needs reform. Winchester MP Steve Bryan is to be part of an inquiry into special educational needs reform in Parliament, which begins this week. Mr. Bryan, Vice-Chairman of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Autism, is on the panel for two oral evidence sessions taking place this month. The first session took place on Tuesday, March the 6th, and heard from parents, young people with autism, teachers and local authority representatives. The second session will take place next Tuesday, the 13th of March, and will hear from politicians, including Children's Minister Sarah Tether, as well as academics and other autism professionals. Mr. Bryan said these sessions provide a significant opportunity for us to hear concerns and suggestions from a variety of stakeholders, organisations and ministers. I know from the thousands of doors I've knocked on over the past few years, not to mention the stacks of correspondence I receive on the subject, that this issue is very close to many families across Winchester and Chandler's Ford, and I'd be delighted if as many local people as possible were able to take part in our inquiry, which will be submitted to the government in due course. And there's a small photograph of Steve Bryan with Jane Asher, President of the National Autistic Society, at the 2011 launch of the Great Expectations campaign.
I'm going to read the Chronicles of the Past. And the headline is Hans Hale's Wartime Hero. He cut an unmistakable figure walking along the Southampton dockside, and one that brought out the crowds to line the streets as he drove into the port. The portly shape, bow tie, and the famous V for Victory sign could only mean one thing: when Winston Churchill was in town. It was March 1949, and Britain's wartime leader, together with his wife Clementine, was heading across the Atlantic to deliver a lecture and to visit Washington, D.C. and New York. From the outskirts of Southampton, through the centre of the town and into the docks, the pavements were lined with thousands of local well-wishers. This warm welcome was then repeated inside the docks by stevedores, crew members of the Cunard Queen Elizabeth, and shipping officials as the couple emerged from their car onto the quayside. They had driven from London in a black saloon, flying the flag of the Warden of the Cinque Ports. The car was met at the borough boundary at Chilworth by police vehicles and motorcycle outriders. A report of the occasion said, "The convoy sped into the broad sweep of the sunny tree-lined avenue as groups of Southamptonians waved hats and scarves. The car slowed at Stag Gates, where a big crowd, including many shop workers, had gathered. Mr. Churchill had a special smile for about 100 schoolgirls grouped on the pavement to cheer him. In the town centre, where people crowded into the road and lined the tram track, the car cruised at 10 miles an hour. Some people ran alongside the car, giving the V for Victory sign, which Mr. Churchill smilingly acknowledged. As the car proceeded by the police escort, arrived at the Ocean Dock, where the Union Jack and the Stars and Stripes were flying, the great man was spotted lighting up one of his trademark cigars. Stepping out into the shadow of the Queen Elizabeth, the couple were greeted by Mr. R.P. Biddle, who is the Docks and Marine Manager, and B.H. Russell, Deputy General Manager of Cunard. Cheers were given by the hundreds of dock workers and visitors as the couple strolled for a few minutes on the quayside, Churchill waving his hat and giving the V sign. In the cabin, Mrs. Churchill was presented with a bouquet of tulips, carnations and irises tied with a Bon Voyage blue ribbon. The presentation was made by five-year-old Mary Gay Bembridge, daughter of Philip Bembridge, prospective Conservative candidate for the Southampton Test. And there are two pictures. The first one is with Mr. Churchill and Clementine in their cabin being presented with the bouquet. And the other one, there's Mr. Churchill waving his hat, I would think, on the dockside.
Next story is Beckett's bid to be police commissioner. Councillor leader stands down to campaign for top job. Winchester council boss George Beckett is standing down to clear the way for a campaign to become the Tory candidate for the new post of Hampshire Police Commissioner. Councillor Beckett, who is 60, has told his local party that he is resigning as group leader, but will stay as leader of the council until the May elections. He will not contest Compton and Otterbourne in May, nor remain on Compton and Shawford Parish Council, on which he has served for more than 20 years. Councillor Beckett aims to be the Tory candidate in the first ever election for the £85,000 a year commissioner, which will replace the Hampshire Police Authority. He says his decision to stand down is unrelated to complaints made against him by the local businessman Keith Storey. Mr. Storey alleged misconduct, over his handling of the controversial Barton Farm housing issue. A standards subcommittee rejected the complaint, but this week Mr. Storey made further formal allegations. Councillor Beckett, unaware of the new allegations, until told by the Hampshire Chronicle, said, "It's laughable. I'm completely stunned and disappointed." He continues to say, "I have always been scrupulously straightforward and honest. Anyone can make these accusations. They have to be seen for what they are." On standing down from the City Council, he said, "I think it is time for a new leader and fresh ideas. I have done it for 5 of the last 6 years. Commissioner is an important job and it ought to have my whole attention." The election for police commissioner is due in November. The Conservatives are holding selection caucuses in the spring. Other Tories known to be interested in the post include Sean Woodward, leader of the Fareham Borough Council. On the Conservative Council group, the next leader is likely to be a contest between senior members, John Cooper, who is the current deputy leader, and Keith Wood. Councillor Beckett explained he was staying on as group leader until May because that post was elected by the whole council. Mr. Storey of St. Cross Wood accused Councillor Beckett of suppressing information about a potential brownfield housing site north of Winchester. He also alleges age prejudice in justifying the expansion of Winchester. Mr. Storey is unhappy that Councillor Beckett believes there is an age imbalance that needs redressing, with too many older people in the city.
St. Swithin supports air ambulance. A girls' school is probably one of the best places to start looking if you want to amass a collection of bras and shoes. This is just what the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance requires in order to raise money for their invaluable service. As one of the St. Swithin's chosen charities, the girls have been rifling through their underwear drawers and old shoe lockers to provide donations. So far, they've managed to collect 8 large bags of shoes and 6 bags of bras, estimated at 500 items of structured support. These bras head out to West Africa, where they're to be sold at affordable prices, benefiting the air ambulance with payment from the recycling company. The shoes are also sold to reputable traders in other countries in the same way.
Some good news for a local firm. Hawkeye is on the ball for goal line technology. A Winchester company could be set to revolutionise football with its goal line technology. Hawkeye Innovations, based in Coldon Common, has made it into the second phase of testing following a decision by the International Football Association Board. The company's system involves computers rapidly processing real-time images to discover whether a ball has or has not crossed the goal line to within 5 millimetres. Hawkeye will undergo further tests between March and June to examine the accuracy of the system in different scenarios and match conditions such as mud, snow or artificial pitches. The company, based in the Apex Centre, Church Lane, declined to comment when contacted by the Hampshire Chronicle. The brand is famous throughout the sporting world, where it's used in cricket and tennis to help with contentious decisions. Goal line technology has long been a controversial issue in football, with governing body FIFA only dropping a long-standing opposition to it after the 2010 World Cup, which saw a Frank Lampard goal incorrectly ruled out for England against Germany. FIFA has currently been using 2 extra goal line officials in the Champions League and Europa League as a way to solve goal disputes, but technology is still being called for by a wide section of the football community. Hawkeye beat competitors Goalminder of Rochdale and the Kairos system backed by Adidas, which used a microchip inside the ball. However, the company is competing with GoalRef, which used sensors built into the goal to check if the ball has crossed the line. IFAB meets in July to make a final decision on the technology, and if approved, it could be used in the Premier League as early as the 2012-13 season. It could also be tested in lower-profile FIFA youth tournaments to slowly introduce the system into mainstream competition.
Late-night buses for students. Let them get on their bikes. Get on your bike. That was the message from County Transport Chief Mel Kendall to Winchester University students as the City Councillor called for the return of late-night buses. Hampshire County Council cut the subsidy to loss-making bus services last year, with many in Winchester stopping at 9 p.m. County Councillor Brian Collins said the university might be willing to help subsidise an evening bus service between the city centre and its halls of residence off Romsey Road. But the Tory councillor Kendall said, wouldn't it be cheaper for students to buy bicycles? When Councillor Colin protested Romsey Road was a steep hill, Councillor Kendall retorted, "Diddums," adding, "They are students aged 18 to 25. They shouldn't be worried about a hill." Council officials estimate it would cost up to £13,800 to provide a Thursday to Saturday evening service on Winchester City routes and up to £29,000 for a Monday to Saturday service. Speaking at the County's Council's Environmental and Transport Decision Day on Tuesday, Councillor Collins said, "Winchester Town Forum was willing to fork out £10,000. He said, "That is on the table already." The Liberal Democrat councillor said he was talking to the University and Winchester Business Improvement District, called BID, about further support. Councillor Collins said there would still be a funding gap of between £2,000 and £5,000 for a six-day service and asked the county to consider making a contribution. But Councillor Kendall said equally good causes or cases could be made for reversing the night-time cuts in Andover, Basingstoke and New Milton. The Conservative council boss said he had received a 300-signature petition from Winchester locals appealing for the return of late-night buses, adding if that number used the service, there would be no need for a subsidy. During the meeting, Councillor Kendall approved retendering of local buses in the Winchester area, including school services. The subsidy will be cut from £300,000 in 2011 to £277,753 in 2012. But the services will remain largely the same, although some of the bus operators will change. Velvet and Zellabus, sorry if I've said that incorrectly, have been awarded the contracts to run many of the services currently provided by Stagecoach. Councillor Kendall thanked officers for driving down costs by renegotiating contracts. If external funding from Winchester Town Forum is confirmed, the council may award a tender for later evening journeys.
Public's chance to take part in light show. The door is open to take part in a major new show at Winchester Cathedral. A host of household names are recording audio for Winchester Chronicles of Light in the coming months, but there will be supporting roles available for local actors who fancy joining the production. Along with speaking parts in the show, there are also opportunities backstage in costume and front of house. An informal meeting is being held at 12 noon tomorrow, well, that's today, Friday, called Search for a Star. It will be followed by official auditions on Monday and Tuesday, March 19th and 20th at 6:30 p.m. The events will take place at the Education Centre in the Cathedral's Inner Close. More details and an application form to join Search for a Star can be found at winchestercathedral.org.uk. As previously reported, Winchester Chronicles of Light will tell the story of the cathedral from its foundation to the present day. Those taking part in the project include Dame Judy Dench, Alistair Stewart, David Suchet and Alan Titchmarsh. The lineup also includes Wendy Craig with Bernard Cribbins, who were at the official launch last month. Tickets are already on sale for the event itself, which will run from Friday, October the 12th to Sunday, October the 28th. Call 01962 857275 to book. That's 01962 857275.
Restaurant is fined £19,000 for poor state of kitchen. A Winchester restaurant has been fined nearly £20,000 for the quite appalling state of its kitchen. Andover magistrates held on Monday that Indian restaurant Balaka in Stony Lane Week had been warned several times in the past about hygiene standards. Owner Shafi Hussain admitted 6 food hygiene breaches after inspectors visited the curry house last April. The court heard that £25,000 had been spent on improvements since then, and the kitchen passed its most recent check. Scott Stemp, prosecuting, said regular visits were made between 2003 and 2010. He said that four cautions were issued by Winchester City Council during that time. Last April, inspectors found dirt and grease in the kitchen and also on utensils. A tub of pre-cooked rice was also left at room temperature instead of being chilled. He added, Mr. Stemp added, that the kitchen was generally in poor repair. He said inspectors found holes in the ceiling and the rear door, making it easy for insects to get inside. Mr. Stemp said the council viewed this as a continual breach because there had been a failure to respond to previous advice. Mr. Hussain, a director of Woking-based Runnygold Limited, which owns Balaco, showed his accounts to the magistrates. They revealed that since the hygiene breach was reported, turnover had dropped by 25%. Tim Wilkinson, mitigating, said Balaco employed six people and a major fine could put the business at risk. He added that his client spent £25,000 on improvements after the inspection. He said over the last year or so, there had been a considerable commitment by Mr. Hussain to improve the kitchen. The firm hired a health and safety expert to advise them and bought in new equipment, said Mr. Williamson. It included a cold room, chillers, refrigerators, shelving and a new tandoor oven. Mr. Williamson added, this is a concerted effort by Mr. Hussain to put his money where his mouth is. The court also heard that inspectors recently visited Balaco and gave it a clean bill of health. However, the magistrates, who were shown pictures taken last April, said the state of the kitchen was quite appalling. They fined Runnygold Limited £12,000 and £7,138.48 in costs and surcharges, making £19,138.48 in all. Afterwards, Mr. Hussain said, the inspection took place in April 2011, whilst the restaurant was undergoing an extensive refurbishment. We cooperated fully with the inspectors and have now completed our refurbishment programme, which has seen us install state-of-the-art equipment to ensure that the quality of food that our guests receive is second to none. Our efforts have resulted in us being awarded 3 stars for the standard of cleanliness and for our thorough safety management systems. Councillor Victoria Weston, portfolio holder for Environment and Transport on the City Council, said the City Council will not hesitate to take action in the courts when businesses continue to fail to comply with food safety legislation. They have a choice to listen to the inspection team or face the consequences if they do not.
This is a sweet little story. Giraffe named in honour of anniversary. Marwell Wildlife has named its new baby Rothschild giraffe, Ruby, in honour of the park's 40th anniversary this year. Ruby is the first baby from Mum Ursula, and there's a lovely picture of Ursula, the mummy giraffe, nestling down and nuzzling her baby. And the, Ruby was born 4 weeks ago while the park was open, meaning visitors got a chance to witness it firsthand. Ian Goodwin, giraffe section manager, said, Ruby is growing stronger every day and Ursula is taking to motherhood very well. A lot of visitors have come to see Ruby, especially those that witnessed the birth. Ruby was born as part of a European breeding programme as the species is endangered because of threats in the wild such as poaching and habitat loss. It is thought only a few hundred of the animals are left in the wild.
Simon wants to pay back charity. A soldier and father will be pounding the pavements for the charity that helped his family cope with a rare skin condition. Simon Reed is to take part in the Isle of Wight Half Marathon after son Alfie was born with a large congenital melanocytic nevus, CMN, a type of birthmark. One in every 50 to 100 people is born with a small melanocytic nevus, but large congenital nevi occur approximately once in every 20,000 births. Mr. Reed, who is a Lance Corporal in the Royal Army Medical Corps, has done 2 7-month tours in Afghanistan. The 24-year-old from Worthy Down was serving in Cyprus when his wife Tara, 23, gave birth in September there, and it was only then that Alpha's condition became apparent. Doctors at the hospital had never encountered it before. "It cannot get picked up in any scans," said Mr. Reed of Blackpool Road, who works as an Army training instructor at the Army Training Foundation College in Winchester. "It was a bit scary. We didn't expect it, to be honest. But I just wanted to get him sorted and get him to England. The CMN covers Alfie's back, bottom and stomach, but he also has smaller CMNs called satellites on his scalp and legs. The family's been told that he has around 200. Although Alfie is a healthy baby, he also has a CMN on his brain that could affect him reaching milestones in his development. CMNs are thought to be caused by a mutation that has occurred in a gene during the early growth of the embryo. At a month old, Alfie was flown back to be treated at Great Ormond Street Hospital in London. He's been cared for at the Children's Hospital ever since and must go for regular checkups and scans every 3 months. Mr. Reed, who also has a 5-year-old son, Matthew, will take on the 13.1-mile course on August the 19th and hopes to start training from April, running on average 6 or 7 miles a day. And this is accompanied by Lance Corporal Simon Reed and his wife Tara with their children Matthew, age 5, and Alfie, 5 months.
Trees for the Queen. A Winchester civic group is proposing to plant 60 trees to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. The City of Winchester Trust is looking for suggested sites for the permanent living tribute to the monarch. The Trust is also holding a competition and asking people to nominate their favourite trees in the city. Entries of favourites, sites and tree species should be with the Trust offices in Upper Brook Street by April the 13th.
Preserve Garage Site. Winchester preservation campaigners want to save an endangered historic garage. The Peugeot dealer in Southgate Street closed recently, opening the possibility that the site could be redeveloped. The City of Winchester Trust says the building, which dates from the 1860s, are an important feature and should be preserved.
New Stroke Club, Stroke Support Club. A new group is being launched in Winchester to offer help and support to people recovering from strokes. Winchester Stroke Support will encourage people to share their experiences and find new ways to cope with the challenges of everyday life. Activities are being planned to keep members physically and mentally active and, where possible, increase their abilities. For more details about the group, which is backed by the Stroke Association, email info@winchesterstrokesupport.org.uk or call 01962 853 943. That's 01962 853 943.
Voluntary organisations across Hampshire will receive a vital boost, with £1.6 million being awarded to good causes. Hampshire County Council's Adult Services Department will give the grants to voluntary groups, charities and hospices that look after and support the elderly, vulnerable and their carers in the county. Those benefiting from the grants include Age Concern Hampshire, Good Neighbours Support Services and Brendan Care Clubs.
On trial for burglary. Alleged Winchester burglar Carl Aaron Waller Adams is due to stand trial on March the 15th. Magistrates ruled. Waller Adams, 24, is accused of stealing a Nokia phone in a raid on a property in Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill, on February the 18th. He is also accused of possessing cannabis at a property in Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, the following day. Magistrates remanded him in custody.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And to our readers, Lisa Nightingale.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Pam Tilbury.
Bye-bye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please try to ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.
Whoopie-doo.